Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'm only quiet because I was trying to think of my top five list of things that are going right for the Nets.
No, it's hard.
And my silence is that I couldn't come up with even one.
What about James Wood?
So disappointing.
Yeah.
How could, I mean, listen, you got to love, he was in the home run derby. That was cool. I wouldn't mind having a number one starter named Gore. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind finding a different manager than Dave Martinez, as much as I loved him. It was time. That's fine. Maybe a better than the interim and find someone who can come in. Maybe the team will get sold. There's that. But here's the thing. This all goes back, and I hate to say it, but it's true. It all goes back to COVID. The Nationals are the last remaining team that are suffering from COVID fatigue because they never got the World Series bump that they so desperately deserved and needed. And after they won the World Series, obviously they couldn't take advantage of it. And believe me, that kind of stuff doesn't just last a month. It lasts years. And I hope we're at the tail end of it. But that, I think, explains a lot of what's going on with the Nats.
Well, and also, I mean, we've talked to some people who kind of know what's going on in ownership, and there's a ton of owners, okay? Mark Lerner's not the 100% owner. There's a bunch of people. Some of them want to sell the team. Some of them don't, okay? It's got to kind of be unanimous. They all have to vote on it. And I'm not sure if Mark Lerner is one of those guys who wants to sell, or maybe he doesn't want to sell. I'm not sure. But they're not spending any money. Their payroll is low. That's why this Mackenzie Gore trade deadline thing is interesting, because, you know, he's a Boris guy. He's not going to re-sign here. He's going to go to free agency after two more years, probably pitch really well for a contender if he gets traded, and get a big deal. And they're not going to sign him to a big deal. So does it make sense for the Nats to trade Mackenzie Gore, even though everything I read say it's a long shot? Maybe that's just kind of based on what they would get coming back. But does it make sense to trade Mackenzie Gore?
Well, you say that, but the reputation of Ted Lerner, who was a mentor of mine, and I miss him very much as the patriarch of the team, and we'll get back to sort of what happened after he passed away. But it's not like Ted Lerner and the Nats didn't do business with Scott Boras at all. They were very much known as a Scott Boras, you know, sidekick, in that Scott would use the Nationals to get some deals done that would make him look good, and the Nationals were willing to do them. And I wouldn't say that Boris is the reason. It's the fact that the team is for sale, and you've got to think about who the new owners are and what they are going to want in terms of players or obligations. And in terms of what you need to sell the team, just keep in mind when Ted died, yes, the control person is Mark. However, the team is owned by several of the children and in-laws of Ted.
Yep.
And yes, it's a lot like the Buss family. Do you know how the Lakers got sold? Is that Mark Walters said, I know you all can't agree on whether you want to sell, but how does $10 billion sound? Well, all of a sudden, all the kids said, well, that sounds too good to pass up, so we're going to sell. That's one type. The second type is when Irsay dies owning the Colts, and he gets the kids together and says, hey, I'm going to die, and how do we feel about the three of you in these three positions, and you continue owning the team? Are you all in? Well, that conversation happened, and that's what's happening with the Colts. It didn't happen with the Nats. There was no resolution. Things were always so up in the air, whether it's Masson and the big fights they were having with Angelos and the Orioles and MLB, whether it was which kids wanted to cash out and which kids didn't, because some loved baseball, some didn't. There was just never any unanimity of purpose. And that tends to then leak down to the team. And I think what you're seeing now is the team is for sale no matter what Mark says. If the price is right and the bid is hit, meaning all the kids agree, the team will get sold. And when you know you're selling your team, it impacts how much money you're willing to lose operationally and how much you're willing to have on the books going forward. So it does impact what you do in the free agent market. So all of this is really quite understood to me why they're doing what they're doing.
Right.
All right. So do you think that they're going to sell or trade Gore?
I actually do not, because if you are an incoming owner, I believe the core adds value to your team.
Okay.
But remember, when a buyer comes in, very rarely, you know, when we sold the Marlins to Derek Jeter, he didn't do a player-by-player analysis. He knew where the payroll was going to be, knew he'd have to trade all the players and bring the payroll down. And that was part of his plan going into new ownership. Obviously, it didn't work for him, and that's how he lost his job. But you don't not buy a team because you've got a player on a long-term deal or because you've got a young player who got traded, because generally your horizon is longer. But when you're the seller of the team, you try to be as careful as you can not to give reasons to a potential buyer to offer less than what you need them to offer.
Do you think the Lerners realized that since Dan lost the Skins, now the Commanders, whatever you want to call them, they've become kind of enemy number one here for the fan base. The fan base is so frustrated, and for whatever reason, you could say the COVID hangover and never got that bounce and everything else that's happened. You know, it's six straight years of losing. They're like enemy number one in this town. They're very upset that they're not spending the money. Doesn't seem like that's going to change anytime soon. Seems to me you kind of think they're eventually going to sell. So this regime will never spend money until the next group comes in. Do they even realize how the fans feel about them, if you had to guess?
Yeah, I think that's why they made a change at GM, because I could give you a bunch of cities where the perception is they're not spending money, but they make the playoffs, whether it's the Rays or the Orioles or the Guardians. There are low payroll teams who do make it to October. Now, if you're a low payroll team that doesn't, like the Pirates, you tend to get overly criticized. When you're a low payroll team that does, you tend to get complimented. You know, let's talk about the Milwaukee Brewers and what they're accomplishing this year, and what we've seen over the years over in the AL Central with the Twins, whereas the White Sox get criticized because they don't win with a low payroll. So I think what you mean is people are upset about the losing and not upset about the payroll. I think hopefully that's what you mean, because if you were competing for a playoff spot, I think that you'd be fine with whatever the payroll was.
Well, they assume, people around here, basically, I understand what you're saying. Our producer has brought up those examples before of teams that have gotten to the playoffs and done well with limited payroll. But they basically say, the feeling here is, if you're not going to spend money, you can't win on the whole. Maybe you could luck box a year or two, but especially when you go young.
I have a ring on my finger for having young players who were outperforming and then complimenting them with some veterans. So,
with the veterans. Like, the veterans are
not
garbage.
Spending. Like, I think their total payroll for guys that are playing this year is around $60 million. A lot of their payroll is tied up in Strasburg and Max, those deferred deals.
So I would like to remind everyone how everyone felt when Strasburg was the MVP and was he going to be signed, when Scherzer was brought in, when Patrick Corbin was brought in. It's not like they weren't spending money. The problem is they were deficit spending. Yeah. And when you deficit spend and you're not the Dodgers, the rooster's going to come home to roast. And, of course, I just mixed my metaphors.
Yeah,
but that's exactly what's going to happen. And that's where you are now. Eventually, if you are taking Peter to pay Paul, eventually Peter rears his ugly head, and that's where you are. So the Nationals don't look at it as though they don't have a high payroll. Only you do, because they're looking at cash out the door.
Understood.
And that's the problem with deferred money, and that's why doing business with Boris is a bad idea.
Here's the thing. It seems like, at least from afar, that the only guy locally that's interested really in buying the Nats is Ted. And Ted's not anywhere near the number that they want, right? So doesn't sound like Ted's going to cave anytime soon. So if they have this team, let's say, for the next 3-4 years, whatever,
The disaster continues.
Can we expect them to start spending money again when the Scherzer and the Strauss deals come off the payroll?
Off the books.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would expect that is when. I think that the fewer deferred deals they do going forward, the better. I think that once those deals come off the book, you do get free operating income that you can put back into payroll. But I would just tell you that if you were to do a $1 bet, Mortimer, I would tell you that 4 years from now, the Lerners will not own the Nationals.
Yeah.
Talking to David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, also a former Miami Marlins executive. So let's go bigger picture. And we can start with what apparently went down with Manfred and Bryce Harper, but bigger picture, is a strike looming in a couple of years?
Well, I think it's not a strike. I don't think the players will have a chance to strike because the owners are going to lock them out.
Right.
And so I think that the day this agreement ends, December in 2026, the players will get locked out as they did a few years ago with the last CBA. The question is, more germane, are we going to miss games? Because this past round, we had a delay of the season by a week or two, and we managed to squeeze in 162 by having the World Series go deeper into November. Mm-hmm. The question is, will there be 162 or fewer than 162? And I would say, given the way that these two sides are positioning themselves, it's a problem. Mm-hmm. But I would point out that Bryce Harper getting in Rob Manfred's face, it's not Bryce Harper, it's Scott Boras. Bryce Harper is carrying the water for Scott Boras. Scott Boras coming out with a ridiculous quote yesterday that Bryce Harper's been held down by caps his whole career. It's enough to make me sick. There's not one bit of a cap that is about Bryce Harper at all. And the funny part is that the rest of the union should be fine with the cap, because the reason that the rest of the union has a problem is the minimum salary isn't high enough, that there's some human pension issues, retirement benefit issues that would accrue to the benefit of an overwhelming majority of the union. Remember, Boras's guys are nothing. They're a tiny percentage of the union, and they all voted against the last CBA, and every team rep voted in favor of it because the team reps actually represent players, whereas Boras actually represents himself.
How much resentment is there between the halves like Bryce Harper and the guys who are making 25 and 30 million a year and the vast majority of the players who are the have nots? I mean, that has to be a bone of contention between those two parties, right?
Yeah, management certainly hopes so. That's how you get deals done. That's why Rob Manfred's going around talking to players, because he doesn't want to count on the union talking properly to the players or being truthful to the players, because they're too busy answering to Boras and his group of, you know, eight guys who are at the top of the food chain. So it's all an interesting thing. And listen, you know how it goes in an argument. The minute you raise your voice and start swearing, you've lost the argument. If it's true that Bryce Harper went nose to nose, he's choosing the wrong commissioner, because Rob's not going to back down. And Rob also knows that, hey, this is fantastic, because the more emotional and angry you are, the worse you are at negotiating. And so if Boras is going to get emotional and his players are going to get irrational, that is going to mean a positive thing for the owners during the course of the negotiation. So I don't think you're seeing Rob crying his soup over what happened.
All right. So a couple of interesting things from yesterday / last night. Suarez gets hit on the hand by a 96-mile-an-hour pitch. He was, if you looked at the deadline rankings of players who would be dealt, Suarez was at the top. How does that affect him? And then also Emmanuel Clase, the closer in Cleveland, he's done because now he's on leave until the end of August because of this gambling investigation. And I'm not sure if you saw the pitches that are in question.
I did.
He threw those balls about 53 feet. And it was hysterical. So talk about that. Those two guys who may have been dealt now are probably off the table. So who are the top two or three guys that will be dealt, in your opinion?
Well, Suarez's x-rays were negative, and the Diamondbacks are thankful, because if they're responsible at all, they will trade him by Thursday at 6 p.m. You can always do what the Yankees did with Chapman. You can trade him to the Cubs and then re-sign him as a free agent if Ken Kendrick wants Suarez back so badly. But the Diamondback season's over. They are not good enough to compete for a playoff spot here in the National League in 2025. So all these free agents to be, you should let them all go and get whatever you can, but do it at the end so you get the best return possible. Have teams bidding against each other and then just choose the best offer at 5:59 p.m. on Thursday. And when Suarez got hit, the gasp came from the front office of the Diamondbacks, not from any possible acquiring team. Right. Because what you do when you're trying to get a player, if the player isn't available, you go to the next player. There's always a next player, but when he's your player and you want to move him and then something happens, you're despondent, like the Guardians. Class A should have been traded, and now he can't be traded. He could end up getting suspended for life over this.
Right.
Rob Manfred has been very public saying these prop bets, man, they're not great. They just lead to problems. But the good news is the gambling companies, it's easy to get caught, especially when players are idiotic about it. But the investigation is going to happen. It's going to take time. But don't be surprised if there's a lifetime ban here.
Wow.
And Class A is a first-rate, top-rung closer, even though his year this year is not as good as last year. But last year was, you know, hard to imagine. You can't do that over a period of years unless you're Mariano Rivera. So I just view this as terrible timing for the Guardians, who also are not in the race, who would have been able to gain assets. And that's how you look at it as a team president, like, oh, man, this is a wasted opportunity. And it really is wasted forever, I think. Wow.
David, thanks so much for the time. We always appreciate it. Follow him on Twitter, at David P. Sampson. We'll talk to you again soon.
Have a great day. Thank you.
You too.
Thank you, buddy.
That's David Sampson.
All
the
right.
Podcast
Bye-bye.
Is Nothing Personal with David Sampson. He's a former Marlins exec. Remember, you can listen to the Junks, hopefully on 106.7 The Fan, but if not, you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast, streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. We'll be right back.